Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're in another open show. So our listeners get to be our guest, and they get to say, this is what I want to hear. This is what I want to talk about. And if you can help me with this, this will be a great show for me. So you get to make those decisions tonight. What are we going to talk about? 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and direct the conversation to something that you want to hear. And Vicky called in before the show even started, so I guess I ought to just go to her and find out what she'd like to talk about. Vicky, how can I help you?
Hi, Drew. First, I want to thank you for responding to the email that I sent you earlier, but I want to delve into it a little bit deeper.
Okay.
So my current financial advisor is proposing for me to do roughly a little over $1 million into universal life. The reason being is that I don't think I will require those funds for my retirement. I want to pass as much funds as I can on to my heirs, and they thought that this was a good vehicle to do that. So you mentioned that you thought that there might be other ways, and you mentioned the gift tax or the gift of giving, you know, each year, and I wondered if that was the best way to keep the funds. I want to still be able to keep some funds for the heirs in the future and maybe tax-free or preserve the funds, where the universal life, I read a little bit more, and I'm kind of leaning towards, yeah, that's not a good thing to do, but looking for options.
Well, you know, I mean, there are lots of different options, and without seeing your whole picture, mm-hmm. it's hard to answer, you know, exactly what you ought to do, okay? So there are a lot of insurance agents that now are energized with the concept that, you know, hey, your children have to take all this money out of these IRAs when they inherit them in 10 years. And if we do this and we do that, we get you this life insurance and voila, you get tax-free money going to your children. And isn't this a wonderful deal? And yes, if you're the insurance agent selling it, making the commissions doing this, it could be a great deal for them. Is it a great deal for individuals? It may be. There are situations where I would definitely use it, but I would definitely be trying to strip out as much commission out of the policies as possible if I were even going to consider doing it. And I would definitely be looking at all other alternatives, such as, could I develop a strategy of doing Roth conversions? Let me tell you something. Leaving a Roth IRA to a child is going to be far more powerful than any life insurance policy going to leave them.
Right. But those strategies are already in the mix. This is dealing with non-qualified annuities that I currently have.
Non-qualified annuities. So there's your problem. First off, is you have non-qualified annuities.
Yeah.
Now, do you have the long-term care issue already resolved?
Yes, I do that. I have that already.
So you have that too. So
yes, I should be getting a pension.
So, well, you know, the answer to your question would be that you would really have to sit down and look and see, okay, what exactly options do you have? Here's the positives of the life insurance scenario. Here are the negatives of it. Here's the cost of it. Here's the best you can get for it. You know, the real problem is that you bought those non-qualified annuities. If you have the situation that you have, that would have been the last thing I would have ever wanted a client to be doing, is deferring more money into the future that they're not going to need for themselves, leaving a ticking time bomb for their children. So something's got to be done with them. Is the insurance? I don't really know, Vicky. I'd have to really look at the whole situation to do it. Are you working with a fee-only advisor? If you are, then I would.
It is a fee owner.
Now, keep in mind, well, do they represent any brokerage firms at all, or are they RIAs? Yeah. Are they a fiduciary?
Yeah.
So they are a fiduciary.
Right.
And they're not selling the policy themselves. They're not going to get the commission for selling it.
I think they do get some type of kickback. Yeah. So
well, then, you know, I would be skeptical, period. You know, if a person's not working on a completely fee-only basis, completely as a fiduciary, without selling the product, I would continue to be extremely skeptical. But I can't say for sure that it's a bad deal, because it can work in certain situations. The commissions are always the biggest problem.
And they could, commissions and fees can always go up, will always go up over time.
And here's another thing to keep in mind, Vicki, and this has been something that I have been very concerned about with our clients, is new clients come to us and say, here's this life insurance policy I have. I bought it years ago. It's a guaranteed whole life policy for the rest of my life. And I analyze the policy and I say, hate to tell you this, but this policy is not what you think it is. And life insurance today is extremely complicated, and you better make sure that you know for a fact that this thing's going to work. I mean, I had a client come in about 4 years ago. He was 88 years of age, and I had to tell him that if you don't die before 92, this policy is going to be worthless. And he was totally shocked.
Yeah, they mentioned in their proposal that they wrote up that it was a 25-year policy, but I'm only 61, so I did the math. And
a 25-year policy? It's got to be a lifetime policy if you're going to do this.
Well, they talked about 25 years. We haven't had the opportunity to talk face-to-face. It's all through emails, right, because of the COVID.
Yeah, I understand, but, you know, I'm skeptical. Now what you're telling me, 25 years, my antennas are so high up it isn't funny. I got to run, Vicki. Good question now.
Thanks for your help.
All right, you take care. I'm going to take a pause, but I'm going to come right back to Mark in Baltimore City. And if anyone else gets online, I've got lines open, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. Right now we're going to traffic. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, president of the Financial Consulate and host of Money, Riches, and Wealth. So often a radio listener calls me saying, I've been listening to you for years and have been meaning to call. When they come in for their comprehensive financial physical, they say, I wish I had done this years ago. If you've been meaning to call and meet with us, then do not wait. Call now to learn more about our trademark financial physical. The financial physical is designed to be a comprehensive second opinion analyzing all your goals and objectives. Are you maximizing tax efficiencies? Will you be able to maintain your lifestyle in retirement? Is your portfolio properly allocated, or just a few of the many parts of the physical? The best part of our service is you get to see the final product before you decide if you want to pay for it. We do this to assure you we are not selling product, and we guarantee the physical to be truly beneficial. Do not wait any longer. Call 410-823-7283. That's 410-823-SAFE, or visit us online at financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're on an open show today, 410-922-6680, if you would like to call in and ask a question. And, you know, before I go to Mark real quick, Vicki, back on Vicki with the non-qualified annuities, I was thinking, you know, one thing you always have to be worried or careful about with those non-qualified annuities that you've already purchased, you realize that you might have made a mistake years ago when you purchased them. Now you're trying to come up with a new strategy to use them to, you know, come up with something that still could be very beneficial for the family. Well, here's my point I want to make, is that when you buy those non-qualified annuities, there's lots of fees and expenses in there for all kinds of bells and whistles. There's the guaranteed death benefit. There's the guaranteed withdrawal, possibly. There's, these different provisions that you could have in these policies that you've been paying for long periods of time. And before you do anything, you want to be very careful before you leave something like that without understanding, or even begin to withdraw money from it without understanding what your options options are and make sure that you're using it to the greatest dynamic purpose you could possibly do. And then there's the other option of a 1035 exchange, leaving that one annuity and going over to a completely different annuity if it can provide greater benefits and you're not leaving anything behind that you paid for. You know, there's lots of different options. Anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. Mark in Baltimore City, how can I help you?
Yes, hi, Mr. Tignanelli. First of all, I'm a new listener.
You said that very well, Mr. Tignanelli.
Huh?
You're one of the first to ever say it for the first time, like, boom, you got it perfect.
Thank you very much. And also, I just want to wish everyone a meaningful Memorial Day holiday observance this coming weekend as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So go ahead and ask your question, my friend.
Okay, I don't have life insurance right now. I am considering life insurance companies and all. I get confused because they have the difference between term life insurance, whole life insurance, and other kinds. I just turned 60 last week in April last month, and I never smoked or anything like that, but it's about time to be serious about this.
But why would you want it? Are you single or married?
Single.
What would be the purpose for buying an insurance policy?
Well, I was told that if you pass away at a certain point, the money would, whatever the beneficiary that I would designate, would get to pay for funeral expenses or anything like that. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, you could do that, my friend, but have you accumulated $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 over your lifetime?
No, not that big, but still.
I mean, do you have enough money that if you passed away, there would be enough to bury you?
I'm not quite certain. You know, I can't say too much like that over the phone, but that's what, you know, because I keep getting offers and people calling me, you need more, what do you want to do? But can you explain the difference between whole and life? Because I get the term and life. Maybe
well, term, if you don't die before the term's over... And normally, a lot of them will stop at age 70. Some will stop at age 80. Some will go on to age 100. But by the time you start getting into the premium at age like, 75, 80, 85, the premium's going to be so outrageous, you won't be able to afford it anymore. So, you have to be very careful if you want to have insurance till the absolute day you die. Term is going to be a very unlikely type of insurance because you can't guarantee you're going to die before the term is over or you can't afford the insurance anymore. On the other hand, if you go with some type of permanent insurance, the premium should, make it to the point that when you die, if the policy's structured right, the money's going to be there. But you have to be careful when you're talking about small policies, $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 maybe. That's where insurance companies really rake in a lot of profit, selling these relatively small policies to people with what seems to be a relatively small premium. You know, like they'll break it down into $30 a month for $20,000 of insurance. And it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but when you calculate it out, at your age and so forth, you find out that you probably bought the policy twice by the time you die.
Uh-huh.
So you just have to be real careful when you're buying insurance. And there's no such thing as a safe bet. Like AARP... I analyzed their life insurance they sell once back in 2006, 2007. Now, I haven't done it again since, but back then it was horrendous what they were selling people. It was just downright horrendous.
Are you familiar with AMAC? That's the other retired.
I haven't seen that one. No, I haven't seen it. But, you just really need to make sure you just sit down and think about what are they going to give me? How old am I? What is my likely age that I'm going to live to? How much am I going to pay over my lifetime for this insurance if I live to be 90, 92, 93 years of age? And what's that look like? What's the internal rate of return on the money my family is going to get and so forth? Just be real careful, And you know, I still wonder if you just have enough money that you, when you pass away, somebody could bury you still. Do you have a house or do you rent?
Yeah, I rent.
You rent. Okay, so then, you know, maybe you do need a policy to help be sure that there will be funeral and final expenses. The other thing you could do, Mark, is you could prepay for a funeral during your lifetime, and that way it's already done and paid for.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
well, I will check into it, and hopefully if I get a solution, I'll let you know one of these days and all.
All right, I'd appreciate that. Thank you for your call. We're going to Tom in Owings Mills. Tom, how can we help you?
Yeah, this question is about donating to a 501c4 organization.
Right.
Now, I understand that's not tax deductible.
Right.
But what I was reading, if I understand it, I could directly give stock, appreciated stock, to a 501c4. I don't take it, right? I give it right from my broker to the company, to the 501c4. And then I would not have to pay the capital gain on that.
Well, that's true with anybody you give it to, Tom. So if you gave me that stock and I was the one that sold it, you would not pay the capital gains on the transfer of that stock to me. Yeah, so transferring stock to anyone, whether it's a 501c4 or to me, is the same thing. You won't pay taxes on the capital gain. But you see, when you give appreciated stock to a 501c3, not only do you not have to pay taxes on it, but they give you a full tax deduction for the fair market value of what you've never paid taxes on. So I buy a stock at 10, the stock goes to 100. I give the stock to a 501c3 charity, I get to take a $100 tax deduction off for something I only paid $10 for and never reported the 90 as profit. That's where it really gets to be beneficial when you start giving appreciated stock away.
Now, of course, that would fall under the the new tax rules for deductibility and all, right? It has to be more than $13,005 or whatever.
Whether you're single or married and all that kind of stuff, and whether your standard deductions are greater and all that kind of stuff, yes, that would be true. You would not get the benefit of it unless your total itemized deductions exceeded whatever your standard deduction is. So you don't do that unless it really, you know, it's going to benefit you and so forth. But so you're absolutely right.
So if I give stock to my kids,
yeah,
you know, appreciated.
Yep.
They pay the tax.
New value? No. They get it and pay the tax on it.
Ah.
But you see, the 501c4 could potentially pay tax on that too, depending on what they got and the appreciation of it. And there's all kinds of rules on that, how a 501c4 operates and so forth. Now, they probably won't pay taxes on it, but they could. There's all kinds of weird laws in that regard. So
I guess at that point, it's out of my concern. Anyway,
yeah, but, you know, in a 501c4, I would typically just give cash. I would not give appreciated securities.
Well, because I bought some Facebook down in its IPO, and it's now worth $200 more a share.
Yeah. Well, okay.
So if I gave a couple shares of that, that's like a huge, gain that I never have to pay on, you know.
And if you're going if you intend to diversify out of Facebook and or you have determined that you're going to sell your Facebook, then I would not disagree with you. All right.
Gotcha. Thank you.
All right, sir. Take care. Good question.
Thank you.
I've got to go to another pause. We're coming to the second half of the show. There's nobody on the line for the second half of the show. 410-922-6680. If you want to direct the conversation, 410-922-6680. Right now, I got to go to traffic. Take it away.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right. We're back. I just had to get back. We're here on an open show, 410-922-6680. Did I say something funny? Yes? We're here on an open show. You're still laughing. Anyway, I like the fact that I can be humorous without even trying. Anyway, so 410-922-6680 if you'd like to call in and ask a question. I do have one caller online, but if you'd like to call in, and there's lines open, 410-922-6680 to direct the conversation in the direction you want it to go into. And I'm going to Barbara in Mount Washington. Barbara, how can I help you?
Hello. I'm 71 years old, and I have a number of IRAs. And except for this year, I have to take the minimum distribution.
How old are you?
71. But I have to take them. I was born right before the time that you could wait till you're 72.
Right. So you were turned 70 and a half last year.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Okay. So especially since the market is down, I was wondering if it would make sense to take a fair amount of the IRA, turn it into a Roth IRA, and pay the taxes, especially since the tax rates are low now, and probably down the road they're going to be much higher?
Yes. Everybody who has an IRA, especially if they're over 70 and a half or 72, and they have to start taking required minimum distributions, especially this year, when they say you don't even have to take it this year, but you normally do, should be talking, thinking, and analyzing Roth conversions. It is an absolute. Anybody who's not doing that is making a serious mistake. Now, just because I said that doesn't mean that you should be doing that, because you have to analyze the tax issue. You have to analyze, well, what's it going to cost me to convert this money? What is my tax bracket? Like, for example, here's an interesting point for you. All right. Mm-hmm. So let's say you get $25,000 a year as Social Security, and you really don't make a lot of other money other than your Social Security, and you've got $500,000 in IRAs. And you think to yourself, you know, hey, self, I'm going to convert $60,000 of IRA money to Roth because tax rates are really low, and that'll still keep me in the quote-unquote 15% tax bracket or whatever the case may be. And so this is really great. This is what I'm going to do. But here's the point. Somebody with Social Security in those lower income brackets starts taking out money and starts to make the Social Security taxable. If I had a whiteboard here in front of you, I could show you you're not in a 15% tax bracket. You're probably more like in a 28 or 30% tax bracket, because every time I create a dollar more of income out of my IRA, I create 50 cents to 85 cents of Social Security is taxable. And in essence, $1 of extra creation of income brings in maybe $1.50 to $1.85 of taxable income, taxed at 15%, is all of a sudden 22, 25% tax bracket, not a 15% tax bracket. And so, you know, you got to just think of these things before you just run off and think, okay, this is a great time to do it. We always do at least two or three analyses saying, what if I do 10? What if I do 20? What if I do 100? What's my tax bracket? What's it going to cost? Yeah, go ahead.
My husband and I were to speak with you, I'm not worried. I mean, we can talk on the phone. I'm not worried about that aspect of it. But how does it work? I know you say you have a financial physical, and then you pay a certain amount for the financial physical. And then once, let's say we said, yes, we want to go with you, how does the fee structure go? Because I know your fee only, which I like.
Right. Everything starts with the financial physical.
Okay.
And, you know, so to answer the question of how's it go, it really depends on what's your situation like after we do the physical. It's kind of like working with a doctor.
If I
sat down with a doctor and I said, if I come in and do a physical exam with you, How's it going to go from that point on? Well, the doctor's going to say
five operations.
It depends on what I find, you know, because it could go lots of different directions. There can be a flat fee, a yearly flat fee. There could be hourly rates. There could be a percent of assets under management. So it depends on which way the client's situation is and what exactly they want us to do for them. But everything starts with the financial physical. That's why we guarantee the physical and say, look, you do a physical and we can't show you that we have expertise that can help you dramatically, or you just don't feel connected to us, just tell us. We're not going to charge anything because we're looking for great long-term clients, and clients want that assurance that you're not here to sell me anything. Prove to me that you really can do this. And if you can, I'm more than happy to pay you for your physical. But if you can't, I also want to know that I'm not going to get stiffed for $2,500. That's how we work.
Sounds good.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, I wished I could answer your question better.
But you will be able to answer my question.
If I can sit down with all my tax programs and everything, I can give you a really good, thorough analysis and show you exactly what the benefits and detriments would be if we do this. All right?
Sounds fantastic. Thank you so much.
All right, Barbara. Take care. Good question. Very good question. But, you know, again, I have nobody online right now, so I'm coming into the final quarter of the show. If you want to call in and direct the conversation, 410-922-6680. Next week, I'm going to have guests. We're going to talk about PPP loans and, you know, all this coronavirus relief for business owners especially. And it's an important topic. And so, you know, next week we're not going to be on an open show. So if you have a burning question, you better ask now. This is going to be the day to do it. And before I finish tonight, 410-922-6680 if you want to call in. Anyway, we have about a minute or so before our break, and I just want to reiterate what I said to Barbara. Everybody should be thinking Roth conversion, but you need to do it wisely. You need to think about what is the income tax consequences if I do this much, if I do this much, if I do this much, you know, where do I think, you know, you got to watch out for that Medicare limit, you know? Remember, you all know what the Medicare limit is. So Medicare Part B triggers a much higher premium when you go over $174,000. You got to be careful of that. And I'm not saying it's the end all of the analysis, but $1 over $170,000, and you're going to pay, I think it's something, a husband and wife is going to be about $1,900 a year more because you went $1 over $170,000. That's 190,000% tax rate if I calculated that out correctly in a short period of time. This is the way you have to think about Roth conversions, is what happens if I do this? What happens if I do this much? What happens if I do that much? You know, and so forth. So just don't rush off and just do it because, you know, somebody's telling you that this is a great time, low tax rates and so forth. Do the analysis. Do it properly. Make sure you're working with tax people and not just people who call themselves financial advisors and not to sell product and so forth. Anyway, I got to take a pause for traffic. I'm going to come right back to Robert after this. But if you want to call in, I still have opportunity for at least one or two more callers. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. Take getaway traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you can trust and help you through all stages of life? Having a team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs gives us the ability to help you prepare your tax return, strategize to help you minimize tax liability, help you visualize and reach your retirement goals, and help guide you in every other facet of personal financial planning. We demonstrate these abilities every Wednesday night on our radio show, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Have you been wanting a second opinion? Then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your financial physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE, or go online to financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right. Well, Chris is waiting to see if and I'm not going to give you the answer to this one, but I'll just tell you that I like the Simon and Garfunkel and Steppenwolf songs earlier tonight. But right now I got to run to Robert in Severn, Maryland. Robert, how can I help you?
Yes. The wife and I are retired.
Good.
And we froze our, we're 60, a click over 60.
Okay.
We froze our money, I believe, from a C fund to a G fund, where it doesn't make anything and it don't lose anything.
Yeah, right. You're in the thrift savings plan with the federal government.
That, boy, are you good. You're pretty damn sharp.
Well, you know, you've been around a while, so go ahead and keep asking.
Did we do the right thing?
It depends.
We lost our butts.
It depends, Robert. You know, so the beauty of yourself and your spouse is that you both have FERS pensions, right? Or at least one of you does.
Yes, one of us.
One of you does. Okay, yes. So you have a FERS pension. You have two Social Security checks, right? You have two Social Security checks. Even if your spouse never worked, she'll get at least half of yours.
Ah.
Well, how exactly? You're like just 60, 61?
I'm going to be 61 here shortly, and she'll be 62.
Okay.
Shortly.
So, and did she have a job with a company making income?
Yeah, but not a lot of quarters.
No, so she doesn't have the full 40 quarters yet.
Yeah, I mean, this is... Yeah,
give me a general idea of, did you make over $100,000, under $100,000 when you last left?
Collectively, when we were both working, we made about $130,000, $140,000.
But what was that of yours? Was it $100,000? Was it $70,000?
No,
was it...
hers was the bigger.
Okay.
Because of, you know, her job.
All right. So, you know, you'll both get Social Security checks one way or the other. Okay. So you're going to have Social Security. You're going to have FERS. And all that could add up to what, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year?
Last time I went on Social Security, they said I was going to make $1,000 a month.
Okay. And how about your spouse?
We haven't tested those waters yet.
Okay. And then FERS pension, how much is that going to be?
She's sitting on about 70-ish, you know, after, you know, she only makes 80% of her total, you know.
Right. So here's the point I'm trying to get to, Robert, is that first you look at, well, what are my income needs in retirement? Then the next thing you're going to look at is, well, what is Social Security and my pensions? How much of that will cover all my income needs into the future? And both of those, the government pension and Social Security, are both cost of living inflated. So therefore, if all of your living needs are being represented by your pension and your Social Security checks, then your investments can be as conservative as you want or as aggressive as you want. It comes down to more of a personal preference, but you also have to think about, well, what are my goals? What do we want to do? Do we want to leave this behind to our children someday in the future? Do we want to spend it? Do we want to use it as emergency reserve if we ever go to a nursing home? Do we want to use it to take a hunk every year to go traveling or something? This is how you come to an investment decision, Robert. I can't answer your question without you analyzing, what actually do I want to accomplish? And if your Social Security and your pensions cover all of your income needs, and you want to be completely conservative because you can't stand watching the market go up and down, hey, that's a personal choice. But if, on the other hand, you need these monies in this thrift savings plan to live on for the rest of your life, you need them to adjust to inflation over time, and you're just sitting in the G fund, it ain't going to work. Something's going to give. You know, something's got to give sooner or later. So I like to say this. Your age should never determine your investments. Your age should determine your goals and objectives. Your goals and objectives then analyze with your other sources of income, determine how you should be investing. And if you don't like the investment necessary, in other words, you don't like being that aggressive, you're going to have to change your goals and objectives. Right? So that's how investing is done, based off of goals and what do I have to reach those goals, not based on, you know, like somebody's going to tell you, well, tomorrow's market's going to go down and the week after the market's going to go up, you know, and so you should be in the G fund now and go back to the C fund later, et cetera, et cetera. All right?
Am I being foolish by having our nest egg in limbo, or did we do the right thing?
You could have. It depends on your goals. And so let me just give you a suggestion. In the thrift savings plan, there are the lifestyle funds, and they are based on a date like 2020, 2025, 2030, or something like that. I would suggest that you consider like the 2025 lifestyle fund. What they'll do is they'll have some little bit of money in the G fund, they'll have some in the F fund, they'll have some in the C fund, the S fund, the I fund, et cetera, et cetera. And as you get older, they'll continue to work on making sure that there's not a lot of volatility, but it will go up and down. Don't get me wrong. Markets go down. It will go up and down, but at least somebody's looking at the overall investment allocation at all times. So that's a suggestion, the lifestyle funds in the thrift savings plan for you, Robert. I got to run. Good question, though. I understand where he's coming from. Ed in Northwest Baltimore, how can I help you?
Okay. I'm 75 years old. I'm retired. Been retired since 2004. I got a question about a variable annuity that I had for a long time. It matured back in 2012 or earlier before. What happened is it used to be Sun Life of Canada, and then it became Sun Life of Canada, and then Sun Life of something else. And I think
right.
It's called Season Select now. And of California. And anyway, I don't really need the money in it. It is about $90,000. You know, it's variable annuity, you know, so it goes over.
Well, what you have to do, Ed, is you have to take that policy and you have to say, what features are in here? What can I do with it? What things have I been paying for all these years? And then from there, determine whether it's the type of policy you want to keep or if there's something better out there that you could move in a 1035 exchange. And nowadays, they have these commission-free policies, which, you know, in my opinion, no one should ever buy an annuity again that pays a commission to anyone, because there are now these commission-free policies that can do everything. Because think about it. If an insurance agent is getting 6 to 10% of your for you putting your money with that insurance company,
that's bad.
Guess who's going to pay for it? It's going to be you.
Why
would you ever want to put your money in an annuity now when they offer them without commission? Nobody should want to do that ever again. And so, you know, you could look for, are there commission-free policies now that I could put my money into? Or should I stay in this one because I've already got all these good things built up in this one? Without seeing your policy, Ed, it's impossible for me to tell you exactly what you should do with it. But those are the things I would think of, is what do I have in here and what 1035 exchanges can I do to other policies without commissions that might give me something better? All right? I wished I could answer more, but I'm out of time, and Chris is looking at me funny. He's still laughing at me, and I still don't even know why. Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Show them here.
things are gonna be much better.